Your basketball appointment show starts now. This is Bucks Weekly, your weekly checkup of your Milwaukee Bucks and all around the rest of the NBA. And now here's your host, Justin Garcia.
All right, a much, much needed Bucks win earlier today on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day. A big day across the NBA. And the Bucks, speaking of big, get a big shooting performance in a huge second half to come back and take down the Indiana Pacers. I'm Justin Garcia. You've tuned in to Bucks Weekly. And it is kind of a hybrid of Bucks Weekly and Bucks Talk as we had no Bucks talk following this game with our afternoon programming, but here we are to partially recap that victory. But I do want to use this hour as a chance at a full hour to hear from you. We don't often get this. There is no courtside on this week's edition of Bucks Talk, so the full hour is yours. And we've started to see a little bit in the last few games in terms of this Bucks offense, their shooting. Is it starting to come around? Maybe. I mean, we heard from Jordan Wara after the game today that Dave Caden and myself had a chance to do an interview with Jordan, and he said, yeah, shooting can get contagious, and that's kind of where we're at now. But what the Bucks have done shooting the basketball of late is very much eye-popping. That now, after two-plus months of saying, well, sooner or later, this team has to start hitting shots, right? It's not always going to be like this. They're not going to be a 30% or worse three-point shooting team. Like, these are good looks. These are decent shooters. These are guys like Pat Connaughton, like Grayson Allen, like Bobby Portis, who have all consistently been or have had high percentage of make seasons from the outside throughout their career. And maybe now we're starting to hit that point where you see the regression to the mean, for lack of a better phrase. In this case, it's a progression to the mean, where those shots are falling. 23 made threes today. You hit 22 in that first game against the Miami Heat. You were averaging 19.5 threes per game during that four-game road trip. And with 23 makes today, shooting at 50% today, that is a number, or those are numbers that are going to continue to go up. So you do need some more shooting. And you just need more offense to go around Giannis. And that's been the biggest takeaway, is as great as Giannis was, Giannis can't do everything. You need to get him some offensive help. Maybe it's finally here. I'm not saying you can expect the Bucks to hit 23s a game consistently and shoot 40 to 50% consistently. But this stretch is closer to what you envision than the first 30 games of this season, 35 games of this season. So that, to me, is a positive takeaway here in these last few games. And the other thing is, we're going to harp on the record, and I understand that. There have been some frustrating performance in terms of the results and in terms of how this Bucks offense has looked today in the first half. Very frustrating with how the defense looked. But as we heard from head coach Mike Budenholzer earlier today, his general takeaway was, I know the team went 2-2. And I know those two losses were two consecutive games in Miami where, granted, for one, you didn't have a whole lot, you being the Bucks. But in both of those games, the Miami Heat also didn't have a whole lot. They didn't have Duncan Robinson. They didn't have Tyler Hero. They didn't have Caleb Martin. I mean, both of these teams can go down the list of, well, we didn't have this guy, we didn't have this guy. And the disappointing part was it seemed like the version of the Bucks that we saw was worse on Saturday than it was Thursday, when this team had more players at their disposal. So I get you can take that, and recency bias, you can look at those last two games and say, well, they needed to come back from 17 to beat the Knicks. They almost let a 20-plus point lead evaporate against the Hawks, and then they lose two straight in Miami, where Miami had some big-time injuries. This was a bad road trip. But as Bud said, There are more positives than negatives. And we'll explain why, because I do believe him when he says there was more positives than negatives. So we'll explain why in just a moment. But, you know, the two big things to update you on, we did not see Giannis once again today. So this is the third consecutive game that Giannis has missed for this team. Now, we had a chance to ask Coach Budenholzer prior to the game, you don't play, you do play tomorrow, but after that, you don't play again until Saturday. Has there been any thought of maybe holding out Giannis for a fourth consecutive game, and then at that point, you're giving him more than a week off? You know, Thursday will have been the last, or Wednesday will have been the last game that he played in. So by the time he gets the floor again, we hope, on Saturday, that's 10 days off. Have you given any thought to that? We'll reveal and explain what Bud had to say about that in a moment. But also, when we talk about guys missing time, the biggest name is Chris Middleton. And today was the 16th consecutive game you played without Chris Middleton. I do think the light is at the end of the tunnel, and I think it is as early as this week, so we'll get into that. But I do want to get into some of the more revealing comments, because some of us have tried to explain all along, let's be patient here. It's kind of similar to the Brook Lopez situation a year ago. Not that, you know, we're saying, well, Chris is going to be gone for months and months and months and is going to require surgery. Bud already shot that down. But let's be patient here. And you see all of the jump to conclusions that goes on out there as it is about, well, what does this mean for Chris Middleton's future? What does it mean for what he's going to look like as a player going forward? What does it mean for his immediate future in Milwaukee? And you can jump to conclusions when we maybe don't know everything that's going on. In an interview that Chris Middleton did earlier in the week with Eric Name of The Athletic, kind of shined a little more light on that, and I'm willing to bet is, if you had a chance to read it, something that is going to give you a little bit of a sense of relief and more willing to be patient with this. 855-616-1620 is the Old National Bank talk and text line to join us on this edition of Bucks Talk. Old National Bank, get old. And again, the entire hour is yours. So when we come back, we'll get into that Giannis discussion. I do want to spend quite a bit of time on the Chris Middleton interview and just the overall situation with Chris Middleton, and take a closer look at those numbers, and maybe have we seen this Bucks team start to find a turning point. We'll examine all of that and hear from you after this on Bucks Weekly. Bucks Weekly here on WTMJ. I'm Justin Garcia, hours removed from a Bucks victory earlier this afternoon on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. 132-119, the final score for those of you in search of it. And this was a big comeback, down by 13 in the first half. It seemed like 10 was really that line of demarcation for the Bucks, 10-8 for most of this game. First half and early in the third quarter, they just could never move past those numbers. Every time the Bucks would slice into that lead, the Pacers would follow up seemingly with a three-pointer, and you just couldn't sink it any lower until they finally broke through late in the third and into the fourth quarter, when Grayson Allen's big three-pointer gave them a 101-100 lead. That was their first lead since the opening quarter. This was a game, it felt like you really needed this. 2-2 on that road trip. I mentioned the comments from head coach Mike Budenholzer of, overall, there were more positives than negatives. And where I do agree with him overall, but where I would focus on is this. The Bucks did a much better job protecting the basketball on that road trip than they have all through December and really throughout this season as a whole. They're still near the bottom in turnovers. Not good. In December, the wheels fell off. And you went from averaging 15-plus per game to 18, 19 per game that you were averaging. And at times, we saw a couple of games where it was 20-plus turnovers. A 28-turnover game against the Toronto Raptors, you still somehow managed to win the game, but it's just way too many turnovers. That number started to come down. The Bucks started to take care of the basketball. And, you know, we heard repeatedly from Coach Bud throughout this process, with Drew Holiday specifically and with Joe Ingles, those were two guys that he would point to and say, well, I understand the turnovers there. No, I get when turnovers occur, 99% of the time, you're trying to get the ball to your teammate and you're trying to make something happen. But in the case of these two guys, they have kind of a longer leash because they're trying to make those connective passes. They're trying to make some things happen here. They're trying to get their teammates involved. And again, that's what this team really needs with no number 34 on the floor and no number 22 for that matter. But with those guys, it seemed like, yeah, I trust that some of these passes that are turnovers right now, in a couple of games, they're not going to be turnovers. There's going to be more fluidity. There's going to be more chemistry. These things are going to be cleaned up. And today, you saw that. You saw a lot of entry passes from Drew Holiday that made it to their man. That in past games, all throughout the season, for that matter, you would look at it and you'd say, man, 2 days ago, that's a turnover. So that was a positive. I still point to what they did against the Knicks as a big, big positive. And Atlanta, for that matter, the following game, because leads don't last in this league. We've had that conversation on Bucks Talk, on this show. This is not, for the traditional fans, it's not the NBA of the 90s and the early 2000s, where the scoring was lower, three-pointers were a thing, but it wasn't what it is now. You didn't have teams specifically hunting the three. If you watch the game today, how many times did you see Drew Holiday get into the paint, have a pretty good look near the rim, and give it up for a three? And transition and fast break. Think about how many times guys just sprint to the corner, you pull up and you shoot a three rather than attacking the basket. That's what the league is now. And with the influx of threes, you know, it's a lot easier to erase a 15 to 20 point margin. It happens to every single team. And that's what we kind of tried to drill home through these last few weeks, is it's okay to be frustrated. It's okay to be discouraged and say, well, this isn't what I expected from the Bucks. You know, what happened to what we saw 3 years ago? What happened to what we saw 2 years ago? Last year was kind of weird too, when you didn't have Brook Lopez for 66% of the season. But, you know, I think the Bucks have become victims of themselves and what they've done and how they've changed that organization. When Bud arrived, they routinely were one of the best teams in basketball. You won 60 games his first year. You're on pace to win 70 games in year two. You won the championship after that. 2 years after that, I should say. And last year, you know, we keep pointing to, yeah, but if Chris Middleton's healthy, who knows? Maybe the Bucks have back-to-back championships. You approach these games assuming the Bucks are going to win for the most part. And this year, that hasn't been the case. Health has been a big issue. Not having those guys, not having Giannis, not having Chris on the floor consistently, not having Joe Ingles until mid-December, you know, that's a big reason why you can't approach and say, well, the Bucks are definitely going to win this game. There's been something off with this team. I'm not disputing that. But it's not just, well, I'm worried about the Bucks. This team, they're clearly not one of the best in the league. They clearly can't do this. They're clearly not title favorites. They've been injured. Quality of play overall is much better in this league. The Eastern Conference, by the way, has become the better conference. You look at teams in the standings here in the East. The East is what the West was for basically the last two decades. Celtics have the best record in basketball. And then after that, the Brooklyn Nets are a team. A lot of people said, hey, they still have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. I'm not going to rule them out. And over the course of the last 6 weeks, the Nets have been the best team in basketball. The Bucks are right up there, and we continue to say, look, when this team is healthy, You can't have a full assessment on this Bucks team yet. When they're healthy, I put them up there with the Celtics. Sixers have Joel Embiid and James Harden. They got a chance. Cavaliers, last year and a half now, have been one of the better young teams in basketball. I mean, that is 1 through 5 now in the Eastern Conference, has at least 27 wins. Only two teams in the West have 27 or more wins. And then you got the Knicks, who are above 500. You have 8 teams in the Eastern Conference above 500 right now, past the midpoint of the season. And if you want to lump in the Hawks, they're 500. They have a chance. You got 9 teams 500 or better in the East. In the West, you have 5 teams that are 500 and 7 teams 500 or better. There's not as many easy wins is the point we're trying to make here. The conference is tougher. The division is certainly tougher. With the Cavaliers, with this Pacers team that tested you today, the conference is tougher. There just is not as many wins, easy wins on that schedule for a number of reasons. You don't have as many teams that are openly trying to achieve the worst record in basketball and have a chance at Victor Wembanyama. At this point in the East, it's really the Charlotte Hornets, the Pistons. The Magic are kind of on the fringe there of maybe it's time to make the playoffs. The Wizards are trying to make the playoffs. The Raptors are trying to make the playoffs. In the West, the Rockets and the Spurs, those are teams that are trying to tank, but the Thunder have won too many games to try to tank. The Suns are trying to make the playoffs. The Lakers are. So we're talking about 4 to 5 teams that are saying it's in our best interest to play for draft picks. The rest are trying to win. And there's so much talent in this league right now when you go through the scoring. 10 years ago, 11 players averaged 20 points per game. Right now, 44 players are averaging 20 or more points per game. You're still hovering around 5 or 6, averaging 30 or more. I've gone through the number of times we've seen a 40-point game this season, and 50-point games, and 60, and we had a 70. There's more talent in this league than ever before, and with that, it makes teams that are built like the Bucks, like the Celtics, like the Nets, have more difficult of a time. Even though you're at the top of the tier, there's not as many teams you can look at and say, look, even on an off night, we're going to blow through this team. It just does not exist where we're at in this version of the NBA. 855-616-1620 is the Old National Bank talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Weekly. Old National Bank, get old. When we come back, Chris Middleton, as we mentioned, gave an interview to Eric Name of The Athletic and opened up a little bit about everything that Chris Middleton has been going through. It was illuminating, to say the least. And to me, I've told you all along, I'm not concerned. Based on some of the things that I'd heard, I'm not concerned. But hearing what Chris Middleton had to say, or reading what Chris Middleton had to say, puts my mind even more at ease. So we'll get into that conversation after this on Bucks Weekly.
You're listening to Bucks Weekly on WTMJ.
All right, so today was the 3rd straight game without Giannis and the 16th consecutive game with no Chris Middleton. It's been only 80-plus minutes that the Bucks have had Brook Lopez, Giannis, Drew Holiday, and Chris Middleton on the floor together. A game is 48 minutes long, and we are into the mid-40s for games played. Right? So that number, not good. It gets even worse when you look at just the trio of Giannis and Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday. That's 69 minutes total played together. At this point, there's been about 4,000 minutes of Bucks basketball this season. So to be where they're at there, or 2,000 minutes, I'm sorry, to be where they're at there, not ideal. But the Chris Middleton thing has been the most frustrating for Bucks fans because of the start and stop mentality. If, again, you point back to the semifinal series with the Boston Celtics, and you knew going into that series you were going to be in for it. That Celtics team came on like a house of fire. Late January, all the way to the end of the season, they frankly should have won the NBA championship, but didn't, and that's an entirely different conversation. But you knew going in, okay, this is going to be tough. Factor in no Chris Middleton, and you thought, even the most optimistic of Bucks fans probably did not see that series going seven games without your second-best player. But nonetheless, it did. And the Bucks pushed the Celtics, and they made it a defensive masterpiece and a throwback to that basketball we were describing before from the 90s, from the early 2000s, where it was much more physical and it was defensive. But you just didn't have enough without Chris. So you were frustrated over that of thinking, well, we didn't really get a chance to defend our championship because we had our full team together for seven quarters in the postseason before Chris Middleton suffered that MCL issue against the Bulls in game two, early in the fourth quarter. So there's frustration lingering from that. Then you come into the season, and I'm sure it was frustrating to not know when is he going to be back. We just heard, well, he's probably not going to be ready for the start of the season. Okay, when? It's going to be some time, right? Okay, when? Very ambiguous. Maybe it'll be early November. Maybe it'll be into mid-November. You know, as we saw, a little bit later than that, but it was the whole start and stop thing that just added to that frustration of he's back. Now he's out again. And now with this last one, I think the cherry on top was last time Chris Middleton played, as we mentioned, he's missed 16 straight games. Last time he played was a game no one wants to remember in a 41-point loss to the Memphis Grizzlies, part of that horrendous month of December for the Bucks. Now, the frustration and the ambiguity piles on when you go back to that game and Chris Middleton's exit. That's the game he left with an ankle issue that a lot of people said, I didn't see where that happened. I remember talking with Dave Kane and Marcus Johnson, same thing. Did you see where that occurred? I couldn't find it. But nonetheless, he's missed 16 games since then. And I know I've said, look, I'm not worried. Much like the overall view on this team, I'm not worried until you get to February and things are still very inconsistent and things still need to be cleaned up and this team is still dropping winnable games. When that starts to happen with continued regularity and we're getting close to or past the All-Star break, then it's time to worry. It's still a little early, and again, you still haven't seen this group together. Chris comes back, Chris is out. But I'm not worried about Chris just yet. Now, based on some things that I heard, I'm not worried. I don't think this is serious. We even had a chance to ask Bud, is this something like last year with Brooke where, you know, I know you guys are optimistic and you're saying all the right things, but eventually surgery happens. Is this going to be the same thing? And Bud quickly shot that down. No, this is not going to require surgery. So Chris Middleton had a chance to talk with Eric Name during the two-game series in Miami. A couple of days removed from Chris Middleton getting more work with the Wisconsin Herd as the Bucks flew them down to Florida. And he pointed out, one of the obvious here, but I think something we take for granted. Rehab is tough. It's tougher than actually playing in games. More hours in the gym, harder stuff. Games are fun. You're in and out. I won't say easier, but games are supposed to be easier than practices and stuff like that. So I'm ready to put this bleep behind me and move on to the fun stuff. So that's what he opened things up with. But asked about this right knee soreness specifically, and can you elaborate on this? What does it feel like? And I guess I should say as well, part of what came out in the story, one of the things I was hinting at, Chris confirmed he was dealing with some pretty severe blistering on both feet. So you add that to the mix. You add the fact that, as we pointed out before, look at the last 2 years that Chris Middleton has had. Your season halts in March. It resumes 4 months later in the bubble. Then your season wraps just before around Labor Day. Then you're back at it, starting a new season with 2 months off. And then that season stretches all the way into July, where you win an NBA championship. Then a day after your victory parade, you and your teammate Drew Holiday are boarding a plane. You're flying to Tokyo. You're playing in the Olympics. Then you come back and you get about a month. New season begins on a regular timeline. Then you're thrust into the season. And then all of a sudden, you get injured in the playoffs. Something you hadn't done before. It throws off your entire off-season regimen, throws off most of your scheduling, and there's two issues to take care of. The wrist issue, which Chris played through for the season, and the knee issue. And you're not going to have the surgery simultaneously. It's not a two-for-one offer that the doctor's offering. You're going to rehab the wrist. You're going to rehab the knee on separate timelines. So all this bit into Chris Middleton's timeline. And as he said when asked about this knee soreness, it's nothing too crazy. Just kind of what I dealt with every summer ramping back up for the season. Getting my knee back accustomed to running, jumping, the force you need to deal with in an NBA game, the contact after being off for a long period of time. I know it's kind of vague, but the truth of it is that's all it was. Just the swelling and all of that. We couldn't get it to go away. My leg just wasn't strong enough or conditioned enough to withstand it. And as he would go on to explain in more detail, this is the norm, this soreness and everything else that he's explained here. He's dealt with this his entire NBA career. It's just never popped up to the severity that it has now in the middle of an NBA season. And he's never tried to work through this in an NBA season. So that's really the issue here. And this injury stems all the way back to 2011 when the injury first occurred when he played at Texas A&M. And that's a big reason why Chris Middleton dropped to the second round in the NBA draft. I've always had knee issues since college when I tore my meniscus. That was one of the reasons why my stock dropped lower, because I was coming off a meniscus injury that a lot of people just didn't trust. But it's been great so far, as he points out. What the takeaway is from all this, and I would encourage you to read the entire sit-down that Eric did with Chris Middleton, talks about not just that, but everything from the last few years, everything we talked about with what he's gone through, those workouts, the high-intensity workouts in his training, and what he does to deal with that discomfort that, again, has been an annual thing for him. I would encourage you to read the entire thing, but to me, all of this makes me feel more confident that Chris Middleton is going to be perfectly fine. And as we've continued to say, this offense being where it is right now, you know, it's not there because of Chris Middleton, solely because of Chris Middleton. Not just the offensive issues, everything we're seeing here for this team. You know, the issues aren't solely because of the absence of Chris Middleton. But the biggest issue is the absence of Chris Middleton. When you look at what this offense has done, and again, I don't want to harp on it, but they were the third best offense by way of offensive rating a season ago. They currently rank 24th, and they are barely in the positive at net rating. They have the third best defense in basketball, and they are barely positive in net rating. That speaks to just how poor, if 24th doesn't illuminate it enough, that speaks to just how poor this offense has been. And it's not like you plug Chris Middleton back in and all of a sudden they're going to go from 24 to 3. But they're going to gradually increase because it changes everything you ask of Grayson Allen. It frees up guys like Bobby Portis more. And it gives you more help for Giannis. And it makes Giannis even more efficient, not having to shoulder that entire load. So, again, I would encourage you to read this entire interview that Eric had a chance to do with Chris Middleton. It is definitely worth your time. But the takeaway to me is a positive one. If this is not a major, what are we going to do here? Even if you take that stance of, well, he said it's an injury that he's had for 10 years and he's worked through. He's had a routine that he hasn't been able to keep to this year because of those other rehabs that he's had going on. 855-616-1620, the Old National Bank talk and text line. Old National Bank, get old. When we come back, take a look at what this offense has done in the last week. Again, 24th overall on the season. But this last week, the shooting has certainly been something to behold for the Bucks. We'll dive into the numbers next in the Bucks Weekly. All right, so the Bucks currently own the 24th best offensive rating in the NBA. But if we look back at a week where, as we heard from head coach Mike Budenholzer, there were more positives than negatives, we look back at this week. 2-2 on the road, one big win today against the Indiana Pacers. Five games played. In those five games, your Milwaukee Bucks have averaged more than 20 made threes per game. Obviously best in the NBA. The only teams close during that stretch of time are two teams that have each played four games, the Sacramento Kings and the Golden State Warriors. Kings have averaged 19 makes, Warriors just under 19. But the Bucks averaging more than 20 made threes. They are taking essentially 50 a game, which might be a little too high. And they're shooting 41% on those threes. 41% three-point shooting in five games. And again, this isn't one big number, one big game. That's the anomaly and outlier that has boosted everything else. This has been consistent. 22 Thursday against Miami. A season high. 23 made threes today. 19 against Miami on Saturday. And against the Atlanta Hawks, they made 18 of them. So during this stretch, the Bucks have made at least 18 threes in every single game they played in. 19 against the Knicks, two 20-point performances, two 20-made-three performances. So maybe, just maybe, that shooting is starting to come around. And to me, what's most encouraging is you had the one game where Joe Ingles was burying threes, but Pat Connaughton has started to knock down threes more regularly. 2 of 5 today, that's kind of in the Pat stat line during that stretch. Bobby Portis shot 50% on threes today. Brooke Lopez hit him. Grayson Allen, to me, is the biggest in that group. Because last year, we spent so much time early in the season talking about Grayson Allen's three-point shooting. And specifically, Grayson Allen getting clean looks, the catch-and-shoot situations that he was being thrust in because of playing next to Giannis. And this year, again, we saw it last year in the playoffs, but this year, the looks of he's had open looks, not to say he hasn't had great looks. The volume of looks hasn't been as much. The volume of three-point attempts he's had and makes certainly have not been as much as he had a season ago. But now, slowly but surely, Grayson Allen's starting to knock him down a little more regularly. That is great news for an offense that is still struggling to find itself. But you just need those guys, those complimentary guys, to start to heat up. Because I think you know what to expect from Drew Holiday. And by the way, took 45 minutes to point out just how good Drew Holiday was today. 35 points and essentially single-handedly closing out the Indiana Pacers. But in these five games, Brooke Lopez has made 15 threes. Drew Holiday has made 15 threes. Pat Connaughton has made 13 threes. Javon Carter has made 12. A.J. Green has made 11 threes. Grayson Allen has made 8. Jordan Moore has made 8. Joe Ingles has made 7. 5 came in one game. Bobby Portis has made 5. 3 came today. And then Marjon Beauchamp has made 4. But of that group, Brooke is shooting 47%. Drew is shooting 42%. Pat Connaughton's still low at 33. Javon's at 40. A.J. Green's at 44. He's over 50 for the season. 40 for the season, I should say. Grayson Allen's hitting 50%. Jordan Wara is hitting two-thirds of his threes, so you have a handful of guys that have started to knock down those looks consistently. Again, you don't expect high 40s. You don't expect whatever it is now. Seven guys that are shooting 40% or better during this week. You don't expect those numbers to sustain, but you just want to lift the 32%, 31%, 30% that the Bucks have consistently been at. You want to lift that up to 35%, 36%. And that's what they're slowly starting to do here. We will recap the week and take a look at what else is left in this week. The previous week, we'll recap, I should say. Take a look at what's left in the rest of this week, because it is, stop me if you heard this before, yet another rather interesting week in terms of the Bucks schedule. We'll dive into it next on Bucks Weekly. Mentioned it's another interesting week for the Bucks. They have their third back-to-back in 13 days, 2 weeks. Tomorrow, with the Toronto Raptors coming to Milwaukee for a 6:30 tip. Raptors won today in the Garden, by the way, taking down the Knicks in overtime, 123-121. Be cognizant. Keep an eye on the injury report, because we didn't get a definitive yes or no on whether Giannis would play tomorrow. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, if Giannis does not play tomorrow, last game he will have played in would be the Atlanta Hawks game last Wednesday, January 11th. And the Bucks don't play again after tomorrow until January 21st in Cleveland. So if Giannis does not play, that would give him 10 days off. And you don't leave for Cleveland until Friday afternoon. So not only for Giannis, but for Chris Middleton as well, you get to spend a full week here in Milwaukee, because Bucks got home from Miami on Saturday. You slept in your own bed Saturday night, Sunday night, you'll do it tonight. Tomorrow night, you'll do it. Wednesday night, you'll do it. Thursday night, you'll do it. Friday, you head on the road. So you get to spend a full week here with access to the herd, with access to the training facility, with a chance to practice and get some five-on-fives. I do really believe we're going to see Chris Middleton on Saturday against the Cavaliers. But in terms of the Giannis, will he play tomorrow? You know what? I'm not sure. And at this point, I would almost lean towards no. He was listed as probable today, and as we've seen in the past, second time this season we've seen a Bucks player listed as probable does not mean you're going to play. Second time we've seen a player listed as probable and misses the game. But that's the rest of the week for the Bucks. Just the Raptors tomorrow and the Cavaliers on the road on Saturday night. We will wrap up the show and get you caught up on a busy day here on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day. 9 games, 8 of them have already gone final. We'll point out the ones you need to be aware of and wrap things up after this on Bucks Weekly.
You're listening to Bucks Weekly on WTMJ.
All right, wrapping things up here on Bucks Weekly. And again, Bucks will be in action tomorrow night at Fiserv Forum. It's the Bucks and the Toronto Raptors, 6:30 tip time. 6 o'clock is when our coverage on the Bucks Radio Network begins, and as soon as our postgame coverage wraps, we will have our extended postgame show, Bucks Talk, here on WTMJ, and our ESPN Milwaukee affiliate as well, our sister station, so be sure to stick around for a long night of Bucks basketball tomorrow night. Some important scores from earlier today, as there were 9 games on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Only one is yet to tip off, and that's about 30 minutes from now in Los Angeles. Lakers and the Rockets. And speaking of the Lakers, I pointed this out on the Bucks Radio Network. LeBron James eclipsed 38,000 career points yesterday, joining Kareem Abdul-Jabbar as the only players to score that many points in league history. He will become the NBA's all-time leading scorer either shortly before or after the All-Star break, so keep an eye on the upcoming Laker games. But the Celtics won again, 130-118. They take down the Hornets, and Jason Tatum poured in 51 points. The Pelicans lose to the Cavaliers, a team the Bucks will face on Saturday. And those are the teams chasing or around the Bucks in the standings. You have the Heat and the Hawks, who are two play-in tournament teams that played as well. Hawks won that one. So our updated look at the standings right now shows the Boston Celtics still in first, 4.5 games in front of both the Bucks and the Brooklyn Nets, and 5 games in front of the Sixers and Cavaliers. So right now, 2 through 5 is separated by a half game in the Eastern Conference, and that is the Nets, Bucks, Sixers, and Cavaliers. Again, Bucks and the Raptors tomorrow from Fiserv Forum, 6:30 tip, 6 o'clock is when our coverage begins, and then be sure to stick around for Bucks Talk immediately afterwards. We'll talk to you tomorrow night on WTMJ.